Hello, everybody, and welcome to this month's free preview of our episode of What a Cartoon Movie, all about 2005's Wallace and Gromit: Curse of the Were-Rabbit. I am future Wensleydale cheese enjoyer Bob Mackey, who is here with me today.
Hey, it's Henry Gilbert, and I'm really putting some welly into this podcast.
And you can find out what that and many British expressions mean in the long, super long, full version that is, what, over 4 hours, correct?
I believe it's over 4 hours. We don't have the final tally in front of us here, but likely over 4 hours. All about Aardman Animation's theatrical classic. It was so much fun to go back to this movie.
Yes, we are trapped in the world of Wallace and Gromit, and like I said, you're going to hear all about my journey to find Wensleydale cheese in the full version, but if you're on the free feed, you're listening to this, or on the Patreon listening to this, we are going to present to you in this podcast a bit of the history segment, but if you want to listen to the full podcast, you have to go to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons and sign up at the $10 level to access our What a Cartoon Movie tier. You'll unlock the rest of this podcast, but also the past 23 podcasts that we've done today, because this podcast wraps up 2 years total.
Wow-wee.
Of doing What a Cartoon Movie. And in case you don't know what that is, every month we look at a movie with our patented in-depth treatment, except these are movie length subjects, so our podcasts are triple or quadruple the length of our regular podcasts.
Yeah, we for folks at the $10 level or $5 folks who go up to 10 on the Patreon, you get to hear over 100-hour back catalog, if you sign up, of us covering films as diverse as Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, Aladdin, A Goofy Movie, Akira, Kiki's Delivery Service, and tons more. In 2020, me and Bob have done so many great films, all chosen in polls by our wonderful patrons. You got to hear the entire full back catalog. If you're already a patron and you go up to the $10 level, you get to hear all of them. They just appear in your current feed. But if you sign up at 10 from the jump, you get to hear them all too. You're going to have a ton of fun with them, and also next month's in December too, if you stay signed up. So come on, hop on the bandwagon, Chuck.
And I think there are probably like 80 hours worth of content waiting for you there. If you've never heard our What a Cartoon Movie full length versions, they're very, very long. And this one will probably be over 4 hours. We just finished recording it. And we spent a long time this morning talking about the adventures of Wallace and Gromit and
the
Were-Rabbit.
We're just crackers about it.
I'm just crackers about this this franchise. But yes, thanks for listening to this little intro. We'll get to the free preview of Wallace and Gromit: Curse of the Were-Rabbit. So to start off for this history, we're just going to follow Aardman from where we left off at the Wrong Trousers until this movie in 2005, although we're going to touch on a few things that happened in the last 15 years. What happened with Aardman? So in 1993, we had the Wrong Trousers. That won the Oscar for Best Animated Short. In 1995, we had A Close Shave, another Wallace and Gromit short. That won the Oscar for Best Animated Short, beating Courage the Cowardly Dog.
I know, poor. It's going to haunt Dilworth, the creator of Courage, to the end of his days, I think.
He'll never beat that dastardly pair. But so yeah, the characters are making waves internationally. Finally, I guess they would air on like PBS, and I think Fox Kids did show A Grand Day Out once. But they were like lesser characters, but now they're making waves, winning Oscars. So
getting lots of meetings in Hollywood, I would bet.
Definitely.
Too, yeah.
Yeah, so like the silver screen, they were destined for that, being such popular characters and such prestige characters too.
Well, and the way they produce their stuff in 1995 especially, they'd have to super scale up the size of Aardman and lower the quality if they were going to produce for television. So feature length is really the only way they can go with the level of quality they do.
And they work very, very slowly because of their process. And Nick Park from Aardman is like, if we announce a movie, you won't see it in 5 years. That's how long this takes from the beginning to the end. So Aardman was producing lots of animation before. They're always fairly prolific, even given how slow their process is. But to the American fan, they kind of disappeared between A Close Shave and Chicken Run. But, you know, Chicken Run was being built from like 97 until its release in 2000, like pre-production in 96. So they were always busy, but they were releasing shorts still, doing commercials, doing ads. And a lot of the stuff I only heard about in this research. So there's a lot of stuff you probably haven't seen just because it didn't get as much play outside of their, you know, stable of characters and their bigger movies. But they were doing stuff between A Close Shave and Chicken Run that like most people outside of the UK have not seen.
Yeah, I think I've probably heard of them after the fact, or seeing like their commercials and stuff in those specials that you'd see in the late 90s that were probably easy television on VH1 of like commercials from around the world or whatever.
And I believe they did those, I forget which car manufacturer or maybe it was a gas company, but there were the talking cars. It was very much like Creature Comforts style, like cars having conversations, right?
Which I still think exists. I see a new one every now and then.
And I got pissed off because that's what the evil John Lasseter ripped off.
Oh, that's right.
No, I mean, not really. The idea of talking cars have been around. There's like an old Disney short that's like that. So basically right after a close shave, Aardman, Head Honchos, Nick Park, and Peter Lorre came up with the idea of Chicken Run. We're not going to go into the history super in-depth of Chicken Run, but it is important. So Chicken Run came into being as a poultry-based parody of the classic movie The Great Escape. And by 96, they had the funding to make their first feature. And by 1997, DreamWorks had worked out a deal with Aardman to distribute this movie internationally and acquire the merchandising rights. And apparently, our old buddy, we have to mention him in every one of these podcasts because he touched every animated movie for 25 years, but Jeffrey Katzenberg. He was interested in working with Aardman, and since the debut of Creature Comforts, their very old short, he pursued them aggressively. He wanted his filthy hands all over Aardman. And listen, we can't be too hard on Jeffrey. He's going through a rough time. We are just after the death of Quibi. A $1.75 billion was wasted in a terrible idea. So, you know, prayers up to him and Meg Whitman. I'm sure they're doing very bad right now. Probably, you know, just squeezing the last bit of toothpaste out of the tube.
God, that guy. There's so many perfect videos of him saying, like, Quibi will be the greatest thing ever. No, we're going to be the HBO
Listen,
of content.
You're comparing apples and submarines.
Oh, God, the worst guy. This is our first time we've done with Katzenberg, brought him up since I listened to the audiobook for Disney War, and it really did give me an even more insight into, like, he's such an annoying executive that he pissed off every other annoying executive. Like, the other executives who are also assholes are like, no, but seriously, Jeffrey Katzenberg, huge asshole.
He makes, like, Eisner seem like a cuddly grandpa.
Yeah. And I mean, in 1997, DreamWorks, you know, formed as revenge by Katzenberg. Katzenberg gets so pissed off that he didn't get the position right beneath Eisner that he left the company and sued them for like literally $100 million. No, more than that even. So I could see him totally going after Aardman just so Disney wouldn't get them. Like if he let Eisner get Aardman like they got to keep Pixar, that would probably drive Katzenberg insane. I mean, honestly, you read any profile of him, he doesn't have a home life. He could have retired a long time ago. It is the competition and the will to
dominate.
He's never satisfied.
I was doing research on him. I didn't know he won the National Medal of the Arts. There's like a really nice picture of Obama draping this giant medal around his neck. I like how Chapo calls that the best friend award.
Oh, yeah.
Like, everyone gets a best friend award from Obama.
Katzenberg.
Huge donor to the Democratic Party as well.
He's right up there with Chaim Saban, I think. I wonder who's given more.
So there's not a lot of pre-production info online for this movie. So I do want to go into just the DreamWorks deal because it is interesting. And we've talked lots about Katzenberg in the past. So Katzenberg wants Aardman. He works with them to, you know, distribute Chicken Run. I think they fund a little bit of it. But in 1999, before the release of Chicken Run, DreamWorks and Aardman reach a $250 million deal to release 4 films over the course of the next 12 years.
Wow.
Because it takes that long to make an Aardman animation film.
That is a Pixar, original Pixar level deal.
Yeah. They are the Pixar for DreamWorks, but I think they have a much better ending compared to what happened to Pixar, which in my opinion is a bad ending.
Films like Onward are a tragedy to you.
Yes. The fact that they cannot remain independent and just had to become part of the beast. But yeah, so along with this deal in 1999, Aardman announced their next film would be an adaptation of The Tortoise and the Hare, although that would never be made, and that project was abandoned in July of 2001. So that was their next announced project, and they still have not made it.
I never even heard about that. Well, in Chicken Run, it being a parody of a specific film, that is so much what they're so good at, is using a parody or a tribute to classic films and using that as a launching point to tell interesting stories. series. Like, you could see that in all of the previous Wallace and Gromit shorts, too.
And it has the Katzenberg touch of having, like, a real celebrity at the center of it. Although, it's just the rest of it's just British people.
I know. It's
just your old, regular British people.
All of your favorite faces from the BBC with their wonderful teeth next to a superstar American. But, I mean, that works for Rocky the Rooster because he is, like, a full-himself dickhead. And it's good to be played by an American. I love the speech that the old codger gives about the rooster, like, Americans over sex, over paid, and over here.
That is a classic raunchy DreamWorks joke. They use sex in that child's movie. How dare they? Yeah, so what happened here is that Were-Rabbit is part of this deal. But right before the release of Aardman's first CGI movie, Flushed Away, it was reported this partnership was ending due to clashes over creative control. We'll get more to that later.
Yeah, that Flushed Away movie, I didn't want to give it a chance, I'll be honest.
I felt like it was the end of an era for them, but it wasn't.
Yeah,
if they would have stayed with DreamWorks, it would have been, but it wasn't.
I was very scared when I saw those trailers for Flushed Away, even though I think it seemed like it still had like a good Aardman story and everything, but I missed the thumbprints on Clay.
Yeah.
What can I say?
They couldn't quite simulate that with Flushed Away, but there's not a ton on the record. Like, their battles aren't as public as previous Katzenberg battles were. But given who Katzenberg is and the kind of movies he produced, I'm guessing once Shrek happened in 2001, he wanted everything to be like Shrek and Aardman movies to be less British. And Shrek had an awful influence on all animated movies. Still to this day, we are now just breaking out of the Shrek mold, where it's like Lindsay Ellis has a great video on this, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, Aladdin was the first thing to tiptoe up to the point that Shrek got to, but Shrek is like the tipping point where it's like you don't even advertise what the CGI movie is about. It's just like Ed Helms,
you just
this
name
guy,
after
that
name
guy.
After name. Yeah, and I mean, that's all Katzenberg. You know, Beauty and the Beast and Little Mermaid, you can see the inklings of it there, but when they could sell Aladdin on Robin Williams, then every movie after that that Katzenberg touched in Disney had that same effect. He tripled it at DreamWorks, but it wasn't until Shrek that he could truly capture his perfect vision of that. And I mean, when you look at every post-Shrek DreamWorks movie that isn't Aardman, you can just see Jeffrey Katzenberg's notes on everything that's there. It's like, couldn't this guy be more smug? Couldn't this be played by Will Arnett? Can't we get Gary Shandling for this? Like, all of these things.
Those Madagascar movies are DreamWorks, right? That feels like the archetypical DreamWorks movie, where it's just like four celebrities playing a bunch of different animals and doing all of their shtick.
Well, and even stuff they didn't make, like Ice Age, just is a Shrek movie. Like, thinking about that era...
just a mammoth.
Thinking of that era of the aughts, it makes me even more appreciate that Aardman didn't do that.
Yeah, I think the aughts actually got me out of animated movies for like a solid decade almost before they started getting better.
God, yes, Matt, I am confirming Madagascar is a DreamWorks
film. Okay, thank God.
Yeah.
So what happened was in 2003, DreamWorks, I totally forgot about this movie, but they released a traditional 2D animated movie about Sinbad, and
failed
miserably. It was very expensive, and at that point Katzenberg openly stated, like, audiences don't want 2D animation, they want CGI, and from this point on all of our movies will be CGI. So Were-Rabbit already in production, I have a feeling that's why Flushed Away is CGI, because it's like, you guys make the CGI just look like what you used to do, but we're not doing the stop motion anymore, nobody cares.
Flushed Away seems like a make good to be like, well, look, while we work forever on Wallace and Gromit, we can put out a shorter production on a CGI thing. But I mean, I hate to admit it, because I love 2D animation more than 3D by a good margin. But I mean, the market speaks for itself on that, that like 2D movies make less money, and it could be kids don't want to see a 2D thing on a big screen as much as they want to see a 3D thing. I hate to admit it.
They grow up thinking like 3D is like the default.
Yeah.
Like CGI is the default. So everything else is like a weird aberration to them. Not like us, where it's like, oh, a 3D movie. Holy shit.
And
this is a novelty.
Yeah, I think I came to like 3D, or at least appreciate 3D animation more once I could understand how folks who are good at 2D finally were able to understand 3D as a way to tell the similar jokes or do similar animation. But A film like Wreck-It Ralph, that works for 3D, but but there's other ones where I'm like, I don't know, couldn't Frozen be 2D? Wouldn't it be just nice?
It'd be glorious.
You know? Yeah.
But yeah, so after the DreamWorks deal, they were partnered with Sony for a while, and now they're with Studio Canal, which is like the international company that owns like the world's biggest film library.
Oh yeah. That's probably a better fit for them, Studio Canal, honestly.
I think so. But also like DreamWorks, they were never more relevant, and I think they've only become less relevant over time, Armin, but they get to make whatever they want.
Yeah, well, I mean, DreamWorks, another fact I learned about them was when they got bought, DreamWorks got bought by Comcast, they paid an extra fee to not have Jeffrey Katzenberg come. It's like, when you buy DreamWorks, you get Jeffrey Katzenberg, and if you don't want Jeffrey Katzenberg, you have to pay him hundreds of, I think, tens of millions of dollars at least, to buy out his contract to be rid of him, because otherwise you have to deal with Jeffrey Katzenberg. That's how much anybody in Hollywood hates working.
Man, I mean, what's he going to do next is what I want to know.
You know, I think he should just stop and retire, but knowing him, the Jeffrey Katzenberg I think I know from reading in articles would try to do another success to prove he Quibi wasn't his fault.
No, that was the pandemic.
Another great Quibi story I read about him was that, like, they had a meeting with Gal Gadot, and she wants to do, you know, some feminist positive thing for kids on Quibi. And then he's like, you know, you could be the Jane Fonda and do the workout tapes like she did in the 80s.
God.
It's like, you're 800 years old, Jeffrey.
All these like Trump style New Yorkers, their brains are stuck in 1987 forever.
I know. They're all the same. That's why they look. I can't believe Katzenberg would be against Trump, because it's like, you're the same guy.
Yeah.
You're all the same person.
Just working in different businesses. Yeah. But yeah, Aardman remained independent, and I think they have a better story than Pixar. They don't make as much, but I think they're able to keep their soul. They never truly sold out. Flushed Away, it might be good. They didn't really compromise there. They made another CGI movie under Sony called Arthur Christmas. It looks nothing like how their typical character design looks.
Yeah.
That's them. That's Aardman.
You're taking me back. I had completely forgotten that film existed. I remember now seeing the trailer for it in theaters and going like, oh, this looks like just some other bullshit cash-in on for a Christmas movie. And then seeing it was Aardman at the end, I was dumbstruck.
And like, they never did that again. Like, all of their other movies look like their house style, and they're all stop motion, and they just get to do whatever they want.
Yeah, I mean, I could see artists getting tired of having to use that house style all the time, but it just, the second you see the eyes and mouth of an Aardman character, even if it's a brand new character to you, I think you just feel this like warmness for it, and you're just like, no, I love this already, because he looks like the same species as Wallace.
It's the only time I like British character designs. It's straight out of Me Culpa You Beano. They mentioned Beano a lot in these Nick Park interviews. I'm like, I'm sick of hearing about Beano. It's like the British Shonen Jump or something.
You're right. It is.
But yeah, so like, I feel like they made it out better than Pixar. And God, I wish Pixar was still independent. I feel like they could have done so much better work.
Yeah, I feel like it'll have to eventually happen, because it is the way of all things. But it's just that if you were a big creator in the 90s or aughts, as you get older and older and you don't want to keep running your own business, it's so easy. You hear the whispers in your ear like, hey, well, just let us buy you. We want to own your IP. Like, you can just retire or make your own movie, not worry about the business stuff. But it never works out. Like, I don't know, who could really know what the Muppets' cultural cachet would be now if they'd stayed independent as part of the Jim Henson Company? But I can't imagine they'd be in a too much worse place than what Disney barely does with them.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, that was all because of the death of Jim Henson, so it was a weird circumstance, but yeah, I don't think they'd be in a worse place independently. One thing I read about the DreamWorks thing is that Aardman was developing an animated movie about cavemen called Crude Awakening, which DreamWorks got to keep. And they made Into the Croods.
Oh,
and then,
I didn't know that.
Like 10 years later, Aardman made Early Man, their caveman movie. So they just kept the caveman idea, but not the exact same story. So two caveman movies happened. I still haven't seen either one of them.
It's also funny that in the shadow of Close Shave, the Wallace and Gromit team mainly focuses on chicken around these theatrical things, but then as a side thing, they do that Shaun the Sheep thing, and that is like probably the most popular thing they've ever done. Like, I honestly, that might be like the how Elmo keeps the lights on for all the other stuff.
Yeah, there are two Shaun the Sheep movies, and yeah, very popular character. And just like the future of Armin, before we get into the production details about this movie, like as of May of 2019, Nick Park has announced like there is a new Wallace and Gromit in the works.
Oh boy.
And he's like, I'm 60, takes 5 years to make a movie, and I need to make another one of these before I can't anymore.
Oh man, that's boy. Well, and especially like because they've had to replace Wallace already too.
Yes.
So yeah.
R.I.P. Peter Salas. This is not his last role as Wallace. That'll be in a short that came 3 years later.
Yeah.
But 84 years young when this movie came out.
I remember in the extras on this DVD for this movie, like they were even saying like, you know, Peter's not getting any younger, but we're still going to make more of these.
Yes, because they cast so many elderly British people for this movie, most of the cast is dead.
Yes, yeah.
Except for the notable stars. But so yeah, this movie, again, you know, Wallace and Gromit are Armin's biggest stars. They're destined to be on the big screen. It finally happens in 2005. So this was originally titled Wallace and Gromit, The Great Vegetable Plot, but that tested poorly because kids don't like vegetables, so
I get, and they're too dumb to understand the clever pun there of plot, of a plot where you keep your, you know, vegetables is growing, that's the area, but also plot meaning a story.
Kids, I think that is just too British of a term. Plot of land,
you know, we barely, it's true, I don't think that's used very liberally in America. Yeah.
So Curse of the Were-Rabbit came into being as what they called, quote, the first vegetarian horror film, and also Armin's tribute to very British Hammer horror movies and also very American Universal movies. So sort of like how The Wrong Trousers is like a Hitchcock pastiche. This is a pastiche of all of those classic horror movies.
Oh my God. It's so perfect. There's something about seeing a constable like walk around and go like, oh, what's he said? Oh my!
and all the fog too.
The fogginess and the vicar going, oh, look out! Like, it is so perfectly British in that old style way. I love it.
And also, weirdly enough, inspired by King Kong, they were like, yeah, if CGI was happening in this movie, we could do realistic fur, but we like the fur that jumps around like it did in the old King Kong puppet. So this giant stop motion character is a tribute to King Kong.
That is perfect. I mean, yeah, in the movie there's like five or six shots that are just direct from King Kong, and I always think of King Kong as like, yeah, the giant ape, not as a stop motion character. He's, but he totally is
the size of like a toddler, I think. So some stats about the movie. It was announced in March of 2000, went into production, like filming started in September of 2003, and this released in October of 2005. The budget was $30 million, and it earned $196 million worldwide. And this is the second highest grossing stop motion film of all time, next to Chicken Run.
Wow. Now that's impressive, man. Though, if you're thinking in Jeffrey Katzenberg brain, you're like, that's like a third of a Shrek.
Just like, we're talking Shrek units now.
Yeah. If you're not in even half of a Shrek, why am I getting out of bed? Says Jeffrey Katzenberg.
So yeah, I think Chicken Run made like $225 million. So well
Very
under
good.
That, but still, you know, respectable.
Yeah. I think back to that Jim Henson, you know, the way he pitched his movies was just like these Armin guys of like, hey, I make popular things, give me the money to make a new thing with you, and you'll definitely make a profit. But I feel like that math doesn't work anymore for so many companies that are like, oh, sure, we'll make some profit, but not $1 billion, and it won't be a thing we own forever that we can put on our streaming service.
Going back to Katzenberg, it made me think that I was just listening to our friends of the show, their podcast Struggle Session, talking about the death of Quibi, the Quick Bite, you know, streaming network. And they're like, what could Jeffrey Katzenberg have done with almost $2 billion? Like, they're talking just entertainment-wise, not about, like, feeding the poor or whatever. He could just give it to Robert Zemeckis and make a return on that investment. He could just give it to like whatever giant name and they could just make whatever they wanted to. It's like, do you want to see the $2 billion Fast and Furious movie?
That was so, yeah, it's like, yes.
Everyone
yeah.
would see it. It's like, what does a $2 billion movie look like? This guy had the money to fund it.
Yeah, if that'd make $6 billion back,
yes.
You'd get it back just to see to see a billion-dollar film, like the promise of that Tim and Eric movie, but to actually see what a billion dollars of movie looks like, especially starring like the most famous people who blow up the biggest stuff, like they could literally film in space.
Weirdly enough, this is such an odd coincidence. This movie, it launched just a few weeks after another spooky stop-motion movie, The Corpse Bride.
Yes, right. A very British film as well.
Also starring Helena Bonham Carter.
Oh, of course. Wow.
So, yes, she's in two stop motion movies that are like 2 or 3 weeks apart.
Man, I'll give Aardman credit for getting her, though, without the Tim Burton connection. Like, she was in every Tim Burton movie for a time.
Yes.
Not anymore, but
nope.
Yeah. But she's great on her own. Like, I love her as Lady Tottington in this. She's great.
And the movie is purely stop motion outside of a few CGI effects for like fog and smoke and things like that. Mm. There's one thing they wanted to do with stop motion, but they had to break their like purity. It's the shot of when the bunnies get sucked into the glass tubes and they're floating around.
Yeah.
It's just like, we could have done that with stop motion, but it would have been the biggest pain in the ass with all of these supports you would need to hold them up. And Nick Park was like completely skeptical. He's like, I'll give you this clay bunny to scan.
Mm-hmm.
And there, he was surprised that it actually worked. It's like you can actually scan in like the thumbprints and
wow.
stuff like that. So that is when he started to buckle a little bit when it came to using CGI, but still his movies are purely stop motion.
That is the right way to go with it, of just like to decide that kind of purity, but not be insane, not be like a truly crazy person who's like, no, I will waste hundreds of man hours to do something that will be not worth it at all. To at least buckle on that and be like, all right, fine. If it'll save us 2 years of trying to film invisible strings on rabbits floating around. The scene looks fine in the movie. It looks good.
I was glad he was willing to buckle for that.
Yeah.
So this movie was filmed on 33 miniature sets, a production average about 3 seconds of movie per day.
Oh, my God.
And they intentionally went for a less slick look than Chicken Run because they liked like the charming handcrafted look of their production. So that's why, and I love seeing this on a big screen, like seeing just the human touch on all of these characters. Like, again, the fingerprints.
Yeah,
you can
yeah.
see the fingerprints as these characters move around. It's so cool. And the hair jumping around on the rabbit. These are the things I love to see in animation, and I like when digital animation tries to mock the human limitations.
Yeah,
it's always fun. It's like, well, it's too smooth, it's too slick, we need to like cut frames or make this a little sketchy or whatever. But here they're like, we want to go back to what made these characters charming and touching.
Yeah, I agree. I like the human touch.
So Nick Park, being a very polite British man, doesn't talk too much about this, but there were some culture clashes between Aardman and DreamWorks. For the most part, he says like Jeffrey Katzenberg knew what he was buying,
mm-hmm.
and he trusted us, and he actually had some good notes, and he knew he was buying movies. Like, these are very British movies. Like, other executives at DreamWorks were like, well, yeah, Wallace is going to talk with an American accent, right? Everyone's going to be in America. And he's like, no, we bought this because people know it's a British thing, and that's why they like it. It's exotic or whatever.
That's cool. That's good, at least, yeah.
But they got regular notes from DreamWorks about making the movie like less stuffy and less fussy and quaint and more cool. And they're like, well, why can't Wallace have like a cool trendy car or whatever?
Oh, yeah.
Like things like that. But they did some test screenings for American audiences. And because of those, they did re-record some lines that were like a little too hidden behind thick British accents. Like, this needs to be clear when this is said.
Okay. It's like how in the Harry Potter books, they had to cut out references to like spotted dick.
They rewrote like 10% of those books, which is why I never read them. They changed around so many phrases and idioms and like names of like products and stuff like that, and they took out the U's. They took out all those U's.
They removed the U's.
But you know what? By never reading them, my brain was never poisoned by that awful transphobe. I can say that I'm clean.
You're
I got
very
out
lucky,
clean.
Yes. Yeah, you are. I guess I'm so used to seeing British things that get localized, but I don't realize they're localized, that when I watch the pure British versions of stuff, like we talk many times on these podcasts about our shared childhood love of Red Dwarf, but like half the things Lister said, I was like,
yes.
Chip Buddy, what?
Vindaloo,
huh? I needed Google back then to truly understand Lister's northern accent.
I guess these are things you just say when you're having dreadlocks and having fun in space.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there were some culture clash there. I got a few quotes from Park about working with DreamWorks. Mm-hmm. So Nick Park, co-director, creator of Wallace and Gromit, says, after doing two features back-to-back, Chicken Run and Were-Rabbit, they were such enormous processes to go through, taking years and years. I just wanted to get back to doing something I could be more in control of again. because it's primarily for the BBC, but he's talking about the thing he's making at that point in time. I'm not getting constant notes about how it's going to work in middle America or how some kid doesn't understand what some northern phrase is. Like, that's echoed in a lot of interviews. Like, how am I supposed to know what a middle American kid is going to understand? You hired me to make the things I make.
Boy, that definitely sounds like he's reflecting on a lot of meetings and teleconferences he had.
And another quote from Park is that they really wanted us to do a Wallace and Gromit film, but at the same time, they also had half a mind on how they could make it work in the States. That was always the question. It was a great experience, and I feel very proud of that end result, but we had to dig our heels in an awful lot. I don't mind that. It was just the effort that goes into that, which is a stress in and of itself. So working with dumb executives, even if they give you your way, the energy you could be using to make your movie, you're using that energy to fight with people for creative control.
I mean, that's so counterintuitive, as is the choice of Wallace and Gromit is the most famous thing you guys have, so let's exploit that IP. But oppositely, it may be the most famous, but shouldn't we change it in some way? I mean, too, like, executives like Katzenberg and probably most of the ones surrounding him at DreamWorks, I would bet they were of the mind of, like, this needs our stamp on it. Like, Wallace and Gromit existed before, but we can make it even better. And if I don't do that, then I'm not doing my job as an executive.
That drives me crazy. And this is a different example, and maybe not a fair comparison, and I know the movie's not that bad, but Sonic the Hedgehog, it feels like whenever something comes from another country, people buy the rights, the executives in America are like, you know, that's cute, that little thing you made. We know how to make the thing you made better. What if Sonic did nothing that he did in the games that you love? That's our movie. And just like, no, give people what the thing they like. Give them what they like. I even felt that way slightly about Detective Pikachu, which is a fun movie, but just like, this is based on a game that nobody played, which is a weird version of Pokemon that takes place. I just like, you don't know better. You don't know better.
In Detective Pikachu versus Sonic, Detective Pikachu, you can at least feel Game Freak's power, that they were able to say, you guys have to at least have 10 minutes of dialogue at the start that explain why this town breaks every rule for Pokemon and why Pokemon do things they'd never do. So they at least do that. In the Sonic movie, they're like, nah, Sonic's like an alien who's like a fish out of water. Like, they just want to do a straight fish out of water story that is easy to write. That's all they want.
And with all these movies, like, the credits sequence is like, well, here's what it should have looked like.
That goes back to my disappointment in seeing the freaking He-Man live action movie for the first time as
was
a kid.
Was that Golden Globus?
It was.
I thought so.
Directed by a literal sex criminal. But that movie, when I saw it at 7 or 8, I thought, okay, we're starting in Eternia. All right. And then they get teleported to Earth and I have to watch them go like, I don't want to see He-Man confused by a watch. Like, that's not why I wanted to see a He-Man movie.
Eternia's expensive, kids.
I know. Yes, yeah.
We blew most of this budget on cocaine. So yeah, also DreamWorks wanted to buy the characters of Wallace and Gromit outright.
Of course.
But Aardman refused. But DreamWorks does co-own some characters created for the movies. So they co-own the characters for Chicken Run, and they co-own the characters created for Curse of the Were-Rabbit that aren't Wallace and Gromit.
Yeah, that sucks.
They want to use Lady Tottington again, they have to pay the Pickle Man.
That's bullshit. I hate that. But I see now why they'd be so resistant to a Wallace and Gromit movie on some level, because that was the real sticking point for that Pixar deal with Disney. They wanted only original things, no sequels, so they'd get more and more characters they own.
And Disney was like, well, we can make sequels to whatever you do.
Yeah, that's part of the deal.
So let's talk about the talent behind this. We talked a lot about Nick Park before, but this is co-directed by Steve Box. The first thing I have on record for him, he wrote and directed the 1997 Aardman short Stage Fright, and that won the BAFTA for Best Animated Short in 1998. And you can watch that on YouTube. It's a cute little short in the Aardman style, but he was the writer and director of that.
Check that one out. I don't think I've seen that one.
And also via Aardman, he did the music for the Spice Girls song Viva Forever, which is a Spice Girls song I did not remember at all. But in the music video, the Spice Girls are these like tin puppets, like tin fairy puppets.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it was off Spice World, that album?
I remember that song from seeing it used in anime music videos, AMVs back in the day, but I've never seen the original.
That's the perfect that's the perfect era for that kind of song to be in an AMV.
But, I mean, that really fits for Aardman's history, from the Sledgehammer music video to the Spice Girls. Totally fits.
So other things he's done, he was a key animator on A Close Shave and The Wrong Trousers and Chicken Run. And then he got bumped up to being both key animator and director on this movie. And
that's good. That's a good, like, a mentored guy who gets to come up the ranks at Aardman. I like that.
And it seems like this was his end with Aardman after like a decade. But he hasn't done much for them since Were-Rabbit. He was like consultant on the two Shaun the Sheep movies. So I don't know what he did for those. But currently, Steve Box is series director on the new CGI Moomin series called Moomin Valley. So not stop motion.
All right. You know, that's I'll maybe check that out. I need to watch the old Moomins are on the YouTube. I should be watching
Anna Moomin.
Yeah, the correct Moomin.
I want to get to the one where he pulls out a knife and then puts it away.
I've only seen those memes. I need to know the source of them. I actually, man, there's a Moomin clip I just saw recently that was like from the anime version that was just a celebration of fall. It was like pumpkins everywhere. It was give me the fall spirit if I were to watch that now.
So the cast, we'll talk about the people who you probably heard of. So Peter Salas, RIP. He passed away in 2017 at 96, I believe. So
quite
yeah,
a life. And I got so much more perspective on them casting him in this from doing that Wind in the Willows one we just did, that he's like, oh, he already played an iconic stop motion British character in Retty. So him getting cast as Wallace was just a continuation of that expertise.
So yes, he plays Wallace and Hutch the Rabbit. Again, 84 years young when the movie released. Yeah, Peter Salas, great, fantastic voice. They've got a good like stand-in for him now, but you just can't match the British age. He lived through the bombings.
I know, yeah. You can hear the raids in his voice there.
So Ralph Fiennes, or Ray Fiennes, as they call him in England, I never understood that, as Victor Quatermain. So the rest of the cast, I mean, a few of the cast members ascribe to Katzenberg's like, get big stars, but Aardman's like, we will. And then they're all British people, which is great.
They'd still got the biggest British stars they could get. But yeah, it's like Ray Fiennes.
Is he the biggest British actor that's not like Sir Patrick Stewart or Ian McKellen or whatever?
I mean,
I think another sir.
I mean, Daniel Craig is James Bond. That's pretty. And
but what else has he done for me lately?
Idris Elba's a pretty big star.
You kind of forget he's British, though.
Yeah. I can't think of other
Idris Elba. Was not as big as Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, hey, which one was in Cats, huh?
Oh, right. I mean, he could have been in Cats for all I know. Which one was in Schindler's List?
Well, sure.
He made bombs for the Nazis, and they worked, damn it.
Wait, no, Ralph Fiennes, he was the bad
He was
Nazi.
The concentration camp guy.
But
leader.
You're
captain.
He's up there. I would say he's probably top five most famous Brits in America. Sure.
He played, this is, I didn't know this, I didn't watch these movies. He was Voldemort as well?
Oh, yes. He's great.
You know who reminds me of Voldemort? A little guy named Donald Trump.
Oh, man. Yeah,
I'm going to put on my sorting hats now.
That shit doesn't
work. I'm making fun of people who do that, by the way.
When people try to compare him to Voldemort, it doesn't make any sense. Because, like, no, everybody says Trump's name all the time.
It's
They're
true.
Not scared to say his name.
So, yeah, I mean, Ralph Fiennes is such a famous British guy.
Yeah.
He was in The English Patient, Schindler's List, huge prestige movies. This was not his first animated movie, by the way. He was also in the other DreamWorks movie, Prince of Egypt. Playing Ramses.
Oh, that's right. He's the villain in that movie. Yeah, he's really good at that. And that casting fit with The Prince of Egypt is totally a 50s prestige film. So it's like, who's going to play the King of Egypt? Oh, a British man with a booming voice. When he got cast as M in the Bonds, I love that because he could finally admit he was bald. It's like, you know what? No more wigs, Rafe. Let's just see. Let's see that hair.
Let it shine. Yeah. Let that scalp shine. So yeah, Ralph Fiennes as the villain. And then we have Helena Bonham Carter as Lady Campanula Tottington. Totty, I believe, is an attractive woman in British slang.
I love her huge teeth.
They're
I
great. They even outdo the regular teeth the characters usually have.
And I can feel like in Helena's acting, you can hear her teeth sticking out like, oh, Wallace.
I think they use prosthetic teeth for her to act with.
Oh, okay. Because I feel like you can hear the fancy British overbite in her. I love that.
So I think most people that are around our age, around 40, know her best as like the hot dirtbag girlfriend from Fight Club.
Oh, yeah.
But for like 15 years before that, she was in a ton of movies. She was like mostly known for being in like Merchant Ivory movies or Merchant Ivory style movies.
Right, right.
Playing very like stuffy British roles. She was in things like Howard's End, that those kind of movies, and Lady Jane playing Lady Jane,
and the doily, the fancy doily,
the tea cozy,
the tea cozy, yes.
Run, don't mosey to see the tea cozy. Yes, we're just doing critical lines here, not Howard Stern's End, by the way. But yeah, like so after Fight Club, that's when she started dating. I think she was like married to Kenneth Branagh or something like that.
Oh wow,
or somebody like that. I'm sorry if I'm getting the name wrong, but she got into a relationship with Tim Burton, and then she's like in every Tim Burton movie for 10 years,
and living in the castle with Tim Burton in England,
separated by like a tube. She had like a separate wife house.
I watched that Superman Lives documentary, and Tim Burton is interviewed for it, which is very impressive, and he's in a literal castle. Like, that's how rich he is.
Oh yeah, Kenneth Branagh, she was with him for like 5 years, and with Tim Burton for like 13 years, and they were so happy together. Two kids with like how are these guys not there? They seem so perfect.
Yeah, well, I got a feeling probably Burton wanted to trade up for a younger model. It sounds like.
Yeah, that's right. He was dating that Lisa Marie model before her.
I felt it hurt her standing that people just accepted, like, oh, I'm watching a Tim Burton film, so I have to see her, but she's great and everything. She also, it's funny, she's partnered with Ralph Fiennes here because starting in 2005, she was cast as Bellatrix Lestrange, the most evil woman and female sidekick to Voldemort in the Harry Potter films.
I guess every British person just had to be in a Harry Potter movie.
If you weren't, you were like...
It was like the draft.
The late Bob Hoskins in an interview was like, he said he was insulted at a certain point that he hadn't been invited to be in a Harry Potter film.
He could have been a Hagrid. Get him up on a box.
Yeah, he'd have been a good Hagrid. But yeah, she's really good in the Potter films. I hate that I watched them and read the books at some point. She sucks. Mm-hmm. Thank God Nick Park has not become that type of dude.
I'm glad too.
It strikes the British too often.
It's weird. I think it's something, the non-fluoridated water in the UK, that's the problem. I think fluoridation makes us less transphobic as a people.